This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 27, 2010. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The open session for Thursday, May 27, 2010 will now come to order. First item of business on the agenda is the approval of minutes for April 29, 2010. Vice Chair, I understand we have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of agenda document number 10-26, the minutes of April 29, 2010.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Before moving on to the next item on the agenda, I just want to state at the outset that items 5, 6, and 7 on the agenda, which deal with audit policies and procedures, the AFL-CIO COPE and the CWA COPE audits, will be held over. So if you're that and we're here for that and we're anticipating a discussion on those items, those will be held over to a subsequent meeting. Next item on the agenda is the draft advisory opinion 2010-05, Star Channel Communications. We have a presentation by Joshua Bloom from the Office of General Counsel. And when you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agenda document number 10-27 is a draft response to a request for an advisory opinion from Star Channel. Star Channel is a corporation that sells advertising time on television stations in Mexico that broadcast into the United States. These stations are owned by Televisa, a Mexican corporation. Star Channel plans to sell such advertising time to federal candidates. Star Channel plans to charge federal candidates its lowest unit charge, a rate that U.S. television broadcasters are required to charge federal candidates under the Communications Act of 1934. Star Channel represents that it is not similarly required to offer federal candidates the LUC because Televisa is a Mexican broadcasting company, but that it wishes to do so in order to be competitive with U.S. broadcasters that are so required. Star Channel asks whether its plan is permissible under the Act and Commission regulations. Based on the information provided, the draft concludes that Star Channel may implement its plan under the Act and Commission regulations because no contribution to a federal candidate from either Televisa or Star Channel would result from it. We received no comments on the draft. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Any questions for the Council? If not, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of draft AO 2010-05 as set forth in agenda document number 1028.
Everyone understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next item on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2010-06, Famos LLC. Vice Chair, I understand we have a late submitted document.
Mr. Chairman, I move we suspend the rules to consider agenda document 1028A.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. We have a presentation from Nevin Stepanovic from the Office of General Counsel. Good morning, and when you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 1028, response to a request for an advisory opinion filed by Famos LLC. Agenda document 1028A has just been circulated, and it proposes certain amendments to the draft in agenda document 1028. Famos is a for-profit limited liability company that has created and wishes to market a web-based product called the Famos Platform. The Famos Platform will allow users to receive compensation from internet-based personal endorsements of product and services that result in online transactions. For example, when a product is purchased online after a personal endorsement of that product by user of Famos Platform, both Famos and the user would earn a share of the revenue from that internet transaction. Users of the Famos Platform who are registered with Famos as account holders may keep their share of revenue, or they can opt to direct their share or portion of it to a charity or a nonprofit organization that also is a Famos account holder. Famos plans to offer its Famos Platform to political committees, including authorized committees, non-connected committees, and party committees. Famos will offer the Famos Platform to political committees on substantially the same terms as to any other person. The political committees, however, will be removed from the revenue-generating chain. Famos account holders may direct their revenue share or any portion of it to political committees where account holders just as they can direct their share to charities and nonprofit entities. FAMIS asks whether it may enter into the proposed program with political committees without making prohibited corporate contributions or otherwise violating the Act or Commission regulations, and the draft concludes that it can. The Commission did not receive comments on the request or on this draft. I'll be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spanovich. Any discussion on the draft? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize to my colleagues. I was reading through this document last night, and I saw, I missed a couple of things in the earlier part of the editing process. So I apologize for circulating a document so late. It contains some what I hope are not controversial amendments. Some of them are just grammatical and citation fixes, and there's one place at, page 9, where I just wanted to make a little bit more clear the regulatory basis for the analysis, and some of the language from previous AOs had gotten, I think, inadvertently truncated. So I wanted to restore the legal standard to what it had been before. On page 8 and 9. So I don't think that these are substantive changes, and I apologize. And I also wanted to note that I was working off the last Word version of the document that I had, which I'm not 100% certain is identical to the blue document. So the purpose of my blue document is just to show the changes. And if people are okay with that, what I would propose to do is to adopt agenda document 1028, the original blue document, with the changes identified in 1028A, my amendment, so that I don't lose any, if there were any subsequent changes between the last draft that I was working off of and the blue document that everybody else was comfortable with, I don't want to lose those. That's not my intent. So I just wanted to explain what that was doing there.
Any further discussion? Commissioner Walther.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was reading in the middle of the night also with the blue draft. And I just noticed there's, small change, I'm sure it would get caught, but if not, it would be on page 9, line 5. There should be a comma after charge to connect the two sentences.
Yes, that was part of my
note. Was it?
No, okay, I caught
great.
That one.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, would you like to phrase what you just stated in the form of a motion?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I move adoption of agenda document 1028 with the changes identified in document 1028A and authorize counsel to make any technical and conforming changes.
Everyone understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2010-07, the Yes on Fair. Brian Swoboda, who on behalf of Yes on Fair, has requested to appear before the Commission to discuss this this advisory opinion. So if you'd like to take your place at the witness table at this time, we invite you to do so. We have a presentation by Cheryl Hemsley from the Office of General Counsel on this advisory opinion. So when you're ready, please feel free to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, good morning to you. Agenda document 10-29 contains two draft advisory opinions that respond to requests submitted on behalf of Yes on Fair. Yes on Fair is a ballot initiative committee in California whose sole purpose is to support the qualification and passage of the Financial Accountability and Redistricting Act. Yes on Fair indicates that it is not established finance maintained or controlled by any federal candidate or office holder and asks if members of Congress may raise funds on its behalf. Both drafts recognize that the threshold question is whether a member of Congress would be soliciting funds in connection with a federal or a non-federal election. Draft A concludes that soliciting funds for a ballot initiative committee would not be in connection with any election and that therefore there would be no restriction on the amount of or sources from which a member of Congress could solicit funds. Draft B concludes that members of Congress may solicit contributions on behalf of Yes on Fair without regard to amount limitations and source prohibitions before the initiative qualifies for the ballot. However, such activity in the post-qualification period would be in connection with an election and would be subject to the amount limitations and source prohibitions of the Act. The commission received two comments on the request and one comment on the drafts. Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Any questions of council? Any discussions among the commissioners or any questions for Mr. Swoboda? Commissioner McGann.
Guess I'll go first to break the ice. Not sure how much discussion, but just to, so folks know where, I guess, various people are. Support draft A, and for a couple different reasons, and I'm not sure I actually have too much in the way of questions for Mr. Swoboda, but I may. To me, it's already been decided many times over that ballot initiatives are not, quote unquote, elections for purposes of what we do here. Some may say that's odd. You're saying an election is not an election. Well, it's not that I'm saying it. Many others have said it. And the way I sort of do my analysis, I tend to start with the big stuff and then work back to the details. And I start with the basic principles of ballot initiatives or ballot referenda are designed to either be quasi-legislative fixes to whatever a state wants to do, or perhaps amendments to their state constitution. Different states do it different ways, but they're the sort of thing that states do, and they don't seem to me to be the same thing as an election where two people actually square off for some sort of public office, whether state, local, or federal. Looking at the court cases, McIntyre versus Ohio couldn't be clearer that there's a difference between ballot initiatives and elections for office. In fact, the case itself, even though somebody say, well, that's about Ohio law, that doesn't apply here. Actually, the Supreme said, quote, Federal Election Campaign Act of 1971, at issue in Buckley, regulates only candidate elections, not referenda or other issue-based ballot measures. That says what it says, and then it also says the risk of corruption perceived in cases involving candidate elections simply is not present in a popular vote on a public issue. And that's, of course, citing Bilotti, another case that's still good law. Now, some may say, but, well, McCain-Feingold. I understand that, but I don't see anything in McCain-Feingold that talks about ballot initiatives. In fact, it's conspicuously silent. I'm not aware of anything in the legislative history that references it. Anecdotally, I think it was left out on purpose. That's not the sort of thing that really would ever stand up in court, but just more being around when the thing went through, and maybe Mr. Swoboda has some sense of legislative intent. I think there's been folks who voted for it who since have spoken on the issue and have agreed with that view. But I don't think McCain-Feingold changed the lay of the land since McIntyre and Bilotti. In fact, it wouldn't be an open meeting unless I invoked the Chief Justice's dissent in Citizens United, is the concurrence rather than Citizens United. The dissent correctly points out that Bilotti involved a referendum rather than a candidate election, and that Bilotti itself noted this factual distinction, but this distinction does not explain why corporations may be subject to prohibitions on speech in candidate elections when individuals may not. So even in Citizens United, the issue came up. The dissent made much of the distinction between ballot initiatives and elections for our purposes, and it was really one of their main arguments as to why they said what they said. So even the dissenters, which some think had the correct argument, agree that Bilotti is still the rule and that there's a distinction. Setting aside the fancy stuff, I don't want to steal the chairman's thunder on this. I give him full credit on this, but I said, you know, I came in with all this case law, and he said, well, that's kind of funny because if you actually pull the Code of Federal Regulations, if you go to the beginning, Book of Genesis here, Subpart A, right, Part 100, okay, Rule number 1 here, 100.1 is scope, Rule 100.2, election. Election means the process by which individuals, whether opposed or unopposed, seek nomination for election or election to federal office, period. Doesn't seem to be anything in there about referenda, ballot initiatives, that kind of thing. Of course, the issue would be, well, but members of Congress are going to raise money for this and that kind of thing. I don't see that as something that changes it because, well, Congress didn't say that that's a distinction that matters. They did say certain things matter, state parties, local parties are subject to regulation. They did say members can't raise money in connection with an election, but we know what that word means. So that is why I support draft A. The one question I have for Mr. Sobot, I think, is BCRA itself, does that change any of this? And do you have any information, anecdotal or real, that maybe would bolster my view that BCRA did not change or otherwise alter what I think was a pretty clear question before BCRA?
Well, I appreciate the commissioner's question. I appreciate also from the commission the opportunity to be here today. I should introduce also my colleague Kate Kane, who's on the papers with me and who is here as well. Mr. Wucher and Ms. Dudovitz are otherwise engaged today. The question is whether McCain-Feingold changed anything, and our understanding of the law, and I think you see reflections of it in some of the commission's discussion earlier, for example, in the Berman-Doolittle opinion, in some of the various concurring opinions, was that it didn't. Before McCain-Feingold, you had a consistent regard by the commission, as well as by the IRS, that ballot initiatives were not treated as elections for FECA purposes. You had a clear range of advisory opinions on that, and it dovetailed with how the IRS understood the ballot initiative process to be, that even though people will come and vote, you know, in the polls for adopting the initiatives, it was an alternative form of legislation. It didn't present the same sort of regulatory concerns. So, for example, back in the days of soft money, when PACs were allocating between their federal and non-federal accounts, they'd calculate their administrative split based on support for federal candidates versus support for non-federal candidates. Ballot initiatives didn't figure into that process. You couldn't get a better federal, non-federal split by adding ballot initiative support into the denominator of calculating your split. So you had, I think, that clear consensus by the commission up until McCain-Feingold was passed. And one of the significant things about both drafts is that neither really discusses that at length at all, and in some of your earlier post-BCRA opinions you see more detailed discussion of that. Then the question was, what did McCain-Feingold do with 441IE? What did it do? And plainly, there was evidence in the record that there was thoughts by the sponsors of McCain-Feingold that candidate elections for state and local office had the potential of serving as a means of circumvention for federal candidates trying to get around the soft money limits. So that was why, for example, you had the FEA restrictions on state and local candidates preventing them from spending soft money to promote, support, attack, or oppose the federal candidates. It's why, I think, at bottom, you had 441IE and the restrictions on fundraising in elections other than federal office. I mean, there was recognized that there was a coattail relationship between federal candidates and non-federal candidates that warranted legislative intention. And I think that was the sum total of what Congress was thinking at the time. And again, back in Berman-Doolittle, you saw comments from members of Congress who were involved intimately in that process who said that that was their understanding as well. While there was a clear understanding and record that, for example, a federal candidate's fate in Maryland is going to depend this time to some degree on the fate of Martin O'Malley or Bob Ehrlich, there was not that same sort of recognition with respect to a federal candidate and a ballot initiative committee. So that's why the record indicates you have 441IE, and since then you've had congressional silence on the subject, you've had regulatory silence on the subject. So the question now is, what does the commission, you know, do about that?
And your client is not members of Congress, right? There's not being, your client's not being controlled or maintained or directed, so this is not the flake situation.
No,
right?
My client is the ballot initiative committee, yes, on fair.
Right, so this is distinguishable from flake. And flake was a situation where Congressman Flake was seemed to be involved in actually setting up and controlling the soft money. That's not the case here.
That's correct.
Any additional questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No question, sorry. I support draft B. It's consistent with the positions I've taken on numerous times. I mean, it's not really surprising that we may not have agreement on this, because every time this has come up, in my experience, we haven't had agreement on the answers. So, you know, new cast of characters, but same old debate. in Flake did actually present different circumstances. I agree with that. That was a fairly unusual case where the candidate actually was intimately involved in the ballot initiative committee, did establish finance, maintain and control it, and the whole purpose of it was to raise an issue that was a key issue in his campaign, and so the ballot initiative committee was almost an alter ego of his campaign committee. So that was probably about the worst facts for someone who wanted to say ballot initiatives are not in connection with the election, and the commission in that part, in that case came up with a compromise, which, you know, I didn't. It wasn't my first choice. It wasn't anybody's first choice. It was a compromise, and we drew the line at qualification and said, well, okay, we can agree that pre-qualification, there's, you know, it's so far removed from the actual federal election that we don't have to worry about that as much. But once you get closer to the election and the activities are more focused on, for example, GOTV, that presents a different situation. Berman Doolittle, again, presented an anomalous situation where the ballot initiative was going to be voted on really all by itself. There were, to the best of my recollection, no candidate elections at all. It was a special election that was called just to consider that ballot initiative. And members did weigh in on that, and several of them called me personally on that, and I filed an ex parte, but all of them noted that key distinction, that there was nobody on the ballot that day. There was no way this could benefit any of them in their elections because none of them were running that day. It was an off-year election. It was a separate it was a separate election that was called just for the purpose of considering that ballot initiative. And in those limited circumstances, we were able to form a consensus on a result, although not a consensus on the analysis again. And Commissioner McDonald and I filed a separate concurrence. It's been suggested that concurrence somehow supersedes the earlier Flake AO. I appreciate that compliment, that I would be so powerful that with only two votes in hand I could actually supersede something that had been adopted by a majority of the commission earlier, but I don't think it actually works that way. I think that if someone were similarly situated to Flake today, they could rely on that opinion as a shield against any potential enforcement action, because it was adopted by a majority of the commission, and a majority of the commission has never taken the action to supersede it. And then we had McCarthy-Nunez, which I think was the 2007-28, which I think raised a lot of the same issues that are being raised here today. And in that case, Commissioner Walther and I and former Chairman Lenhart issued a statement in which we said, when a candidate is raising funds that will be used for voter registration and get out the vote activity to bring people to the polls to vote for an initiative on the same day and using the same ballot as the federal candidate's primary election, these activities will inherently affect turnout for the federal candidate's election. It's not, I hear my colleague's argument. I think that's, you know, it's not a new argument. I've heard the argument before. It's a reasonable position to take, but it's not my position. I think that BICRA did change things, and I don't. And by the way, in response to a comment from the requester, there was a comment file that suggested that draft B punts on the ultimate question of whether it's in connection with an election, and I draw your attention to page 7, line 14 of draft B, where it clearly states, the commission concludes that during the post-qualification period, yes, unfairs activities are in connection with an election in accordance with 2 U.S.C. 441IE. So we did actually answer that question. Now we go on, as we did in McCarthy-Nunez, to acknowledge that there are other provisions that are relevant. And I don't know whether Congress was specifically thinking about ballot initiatives when they adopted the provision on general solicitations and specific solicitations in BICRA, but certainly they were anticipating that there would be nonprofit organizations on whose behalf they would want to raise funds that might be in some way involved in election activities. And they drew very specific lines about what members could and couldn't do in those circumstances. they said that members and office holders and candidates could make a general solicitation of funds on behalf of any organization that's described in Section 501C, which would include most ballot initiative committees and includes this one, as I understand it. Where such solicitation does not specify how the funds will or should be spent. And in addition, a candidate or office holder may make a solicitation explicitly to obtain funds for carrying out federal election activities, those described in clauses 1 and 2 of Section 301.20A, what's now 431.20A, the definition of FEA, or for an entity whose principal purpose is to conduct such activities if the solicitation is made only to individuals and the amount solicited from any individual during any calendar year does not exceed $20,000. So I think that depending on what your principal purpose is, and I don't know what your principal purpose is, I'm not going to infer your client's principal purpose, but depending on whether the principal purpose is to conduct those federal election activities or not, members and office holders can clearly, under the statute, solicit up to $20,000 from individuals and potentially more if the solicitation doesn't specify how the funds will or should be spent. I think that's Congress had it in mind that there would be organizations that would be involved in election activities and that they would want to raise money for them, but they put limits on that. And I think that those are the provisions that apply here, and that's the analysis that I adopted in McCarthy v. Nunes, and it's the analysis that's reflected in Draft B.
If I could just, before turning to Commissioner McGann, if I could just, I forgot to, that we do have a late submitted document in this matter, just to make sure that we're talking about a document that under our own procedures we're eligible to talk about. So, Vice Chair, I understand we have a late submitted document about which we need to make a motion.
I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to continue considering agenda document number 1029.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, all those in favor, say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes 6-0.
Commissioner, we don't have to repeat ourselves, right?
No.
Okay.
You're fine. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear the argument that a member of Congress raises money for a ballot initiative when that member is on the same ballot, and that somehow that may somehow assist the election or somehow that may create a problem. But let me throw this out there and see if it changes it. Hypothetically, let's say someone who's not from California wants to raise money for this group. Say Steny Hoyer, right? He wants for whatever. Let's say, I don't know the politics right now, the current Democratic leadership, and who's on what side of this ballot initiative. I learned long ago California ballot initiatives are things to stay away from unless you're playing hardball. So I don't want to have the Mr. Hoyer get call me or anything and say I'm misrepresenting the position. Purely hypothetical. Let's say he's in favor of this. What your group is going to do, and he wants to raise money. Would that change the answer? He's not on the ballot in California. Just throwing it out there. If anyone wants to discuss it, I kind of.
Commissioner Weintraub.
If you're asking me, I think you raise a very interesting question, and factually that seems distinct, but under my interpretation of how I read the statute, I don't think it makes a difference. And I think that could be, again, I don't know what was in the members of Congress' head, but I think that result could be justified on the grounds that, you know, like-minded voters will come out to support certain issues and certain candidates, and it would arguably be in Steny Hoyer's interest to have more Democrats elected. If more Democrats would come out to support a certain ballot initiative and they drive voters to the poll on that, then, you know, that does create that could create an incentive for him. I agree it's more diffuse incentive, but you know, it's not unheard of for I'm not suggesting, again, this is hypothetical, because I'm not suggesting that's what's happening here, but it is not unheard of for individuals to try and place ballot initiatives on a ballot in order to drive a certain segment of the voting population to the polls, because they think, not because they think that ballot initiative is going to win, but because it's a hot-button issue and it brings certain people out, and once they're there, they vote for like-minded candidates. So, you know, I don't think this is a purely hypothetical risk that is out there.
But if he's not,
Mr. McGann,
if he's not on the ballot, that's what I took from Berman Doolittle. The point of Berman Doolittle was an off year; they're not on the ballot, so that meant it was okay. So, for the hypothetical situation, Congressman Hoyer, I guess, could raise and rely on Berman Doolittle here. Is that it? I mean, would your client read the Berman Doolittle that way, Mr. Sobota?
Well, I think, Commissioner, it shows the limits of the anti-circumvention argument. And I'd like to, if I may, address some of the concerns that Commissioner Weintraub raised, because I want to address those very directly. First, to be explicit on the hypothetical that you laid out, this initiative is part of a decades-long debate over the structure of government in California. It has nothing to do with supporting a particular candidate's election.
I completely agree with you on that. I'm not contesting that at all, but it's a legal principle that's going to carry over to all ballot initiatives.
I simply want that unambiguous on this record because I think it's important how this ought to come out. The concern I understood the commissioner to have articulated, and I read last night the Nunes-McCarthy concurrence again, was that somehow the activities of this committee may have an effect on the campaigns of the members who are raising money for the committee such that it would be an indirect way of promoting their own campaigns. That's what I took the commissioner's concern to be in Nunes-McCarthy. It's what I took the concern to be in Berman Doolittle and what gave the commission greater comfort in allowing the fundraising under those circumstances. There's some problems, though, with that analysis. First, I actually went and looked at what happened to Mr. Nunes and Mr. McCarthy in the primary election when the ballot initiative shared the ballot with them. Mr. Nunes ran in a Republican primary where he was unopposed and he got 100% of the vote. Mr. McCarthy ran in a Republican primary where he was unopposed, got 100% of the vote, and had no Democratic opponent. So there was, you can argue Mr. Nunes and Mr. McCarthy got a raw deal. I mean, there was no benefit to be derived from their campaigns. I mean, that obviously doesn't dispose of the matter, but then you get to the question of what is the effect. The effect that's been articulated is that promotion of the initiative is going to increase turnout, and that somehow is going to affect the outcome of the election. It may or may not increase turnout. I've seen the comments, you know, toward that end, but increasing turnout is not the same thing as affecting the outcome of the election. It depends on who you're increasing the turnout for. I mean, John McCain did not benefit from increased turnout in 2008, and you can argue that John Kerry didn't benefit from increased turnout in Ohio in 2004 either. It depends on whom you're turning out, and that in turn requires you, I think, to look at the activities of the organization. Are they engaging in activities that are going to have a disproportionate impact for one candidate over the other in a way that it is actually going to affect the result? And there has generally, before BCRA, been little to no evidence of that with ballot initiative committees. It's why the IRS is comfortable with ballot initiative committees organizing as C4s. It's why the IRS is comfortable with C3s donating to and supporting to ballot initiative committees in some circumstances because of the bulwark against of an election influencing influence. That was what led you up to McCain-Feingold. So then the question is, you know, is this a real concern or is it a speculative concern? If it may be a real concern, and there's no evidence in the facts of this AO or the previous AOs other than Flake to suggest that, then that's the sort of thing that the commission ought to develop out and decide whether they want to write a rule on it. Because this is going to come up every 2 years, and members are going to want to know what they can do every 2 years, and they ought to know what the answer is. And if they're being told no, then they ought to know why. And the reason ought to be grounded firmly in the statute and firmly in the facts. So you can, for example, develop information as to how ballot initiatives are conducted, how many states they're conducted in, the degree to which the data indicates a correlation of support between candidates for the initiative or candidates for the committee. But that record is not here now. So what you're saying to an entire class of people in California is that they should be constrained in what they can do to support legislation over the structure of their government, and that's going to have a distortive effect on this election. I mean, so for example, the comment that Mr. Munger filed, there's no accident that Mr. Munger filed this comment. Mr. Munger opposes our initiative. Mr. Munger supports a competing initiative that tries to expand the role of the Citizens Redistricting Commission. So he realizes that if everybody's playing by California rules, if everybody's playing under the same rules, that there's going to be a fair fight. But if he can come to this agency and ask them to constrain a universe of people who are apt to support this initiative, that he's going to have, that you're going to put your thumbs on the scale. That is what you're asked to do here today. And I guess the question I would tee up for the commission is there a sufficiently strong and grounded basis to do it? I would submit, based on the record and based on the law to date, and certainly the pre-McCain-Feingold law and the legislative history, that there's not. And the consequence of either deadlock on this or consequences of constraint that's not really supported by a record of election influencing intent is going to have continued confusion for other committees going future. You will have future advisory opinions on this subject where, you know, and heaven knows what answers they'll elicit, and it's going to affect this debate over this issue, which really at bottom has nothing to do with the electoral success of these candidates.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you. I appreciate that, but for one thing, I can't put out a general principle of law based on what might or might be the facts in this individual ballot initiative. The Berman Doolittle AO was premised on the notion that it was impossible. It was physically, metaphysically, any way you look at it, it was impossible to affect any candidate elections because there weren't any candidate elections on the ballot at the same time. That is a very different fact pattern than the one that we have before us today. And as I said, I think the way the statute reads, you know, I don't know what 501c groups the Congress was anticipating would come along that they would want to raise money for under the general and specific solicitation provisions, but they provided for that, and they provided limits for that, and I think they have to live with those limits. You know, could we do a rulemaking? Sure, we could do a rulemaking. I don't know that we would end up in a different place than we've been every time the commission has considered it. The problem is not you would have the clarity that you seek if we had four votes for draft B. You just wouldn't like the answer. It is unfortunate when the commission doesn't agree. I completely agree with that. It is very unfortunate when we cannot agree and we cannot issue a clear opinion that everybody can rely on. But that, unfortunately, sometimes happens where commissioners disagree on the law, and this is a long-standing issue where commissioners, you know, not just this group of commissioners, but, you know, I've been through this actually with three separate groups of commissioners now, and every single time we couldn't come up with, you know, in Flake we came up with a compromise solution, but after that we have been unable to come up with a consensus approach to this, and I regret that, but, you know, sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Commissioner Walther.
Thanks a lot for your comments. They're always well advocated. I'm in the camp for draft B, but for me an important factor has been consistently with the way I voted before, and I think I voted with the Republicans alone to support a rule when they were only talking about municipal elections, for example. Some time ago it was a one-year rule. We agreed on that, and we haven't done anything about it since then. My thought has been whenever you have an election with a federal candidate, regardless of who's raising the money, you've got essentially a federal election. And in this particular case, I think there's no doubt that when you can raise a limited amount of money for voter ID, get out the vote, voter registration, the ballot initiative has electoral implications, and it's on the same day, then those are factors in the future going forward that are going to be important in my own mind. And I believe that when a candidate wants to really raise, if the candidate is running, or even not, I'll give you an example in Nevada, for example, where a state senator from the north was well regarded in the Senate, but no one knew him down south, and that's where all the people were. So he decided to champion an initiative that was popular down south and popular statewide, really, and that's, you know, no taxes. It was a no tax initiative, and went out on that, and there was no chance it could win. But what it did is it gave him a great deal of money and adherence to the view, and he raised his visibility down south to the point where everybody knew who he was. Then was able to run for Congress and then subsequently a governor. So it's a very powerful campaign tool in certain instances where somebody can find, first of all, the adherence to a particular cause become known, become agitated, become ready to work on it, and sometimes in the cause they don't even care who the candidate is as long as they know that candidate's going to vote in that direction. And so I think for me, it's hard to agree on the second part of this, and that is, and I guess in the future you've got, I think, unanimous, at least opinions today, that you can do pre-qualification solicitation, but after that I'm going to go with draft B.
Commissioner McGann.
Just a factual clarification question, and I think draft A may have muffed this a little bit. Is your client going to do voter registration, or is it just voter ID and get out the vote of the voters at your ID for the ballot initiative? Because I reread your request, and once I reread it, it seems like you're not doing a sort of a generic voter reg that will help everybody. It seems like it's more targeted.
That goes, Commissioner, to Commissioner Weintraub's earlier statement about the clarity, about the confusion over the clarity and the answer we're seeking the commission, the question we thought the commission was punting in our comments, and I'd like to discuss that. We make no pretense whatsoever about who we are. We're a ballot initiative committee. We plan to promote the ballot initiative and to get people to vote through it through whatever means are expedient. At present and up through June, we're in the process of qualifying the initiative for the ballot. That is where our activities are focused. In terms of developing and shaping our political program and what that's going to consist of, I mean, those are decisions that have yet to been made. I mean, we have indicated to the commission that we were going to conduct, you know, activities to get out the vote for the initiative and in part to try to mobilize people to support the initiative because we wanted to have the maximum clarity in terms of what, you know, we could do. And toward that end, I wouldn't preclude the possibility that we do register voters in an effort to try to get people to support the initiative. But the idea that we can right now know what proportion of our activity is going to consist specifically of FEA, neither us nor anybody else in our situation is able to know that right now. I mean, there's one reason for that. You're actually in the process of rewriting your definition of FEA. I mean, I don't know what's going to qualify as GOTV in November. But setting that aside, I mean, we are, you know, that's the question, I think, on which draft B, we would like some more certain guidance should the commission adopt it, which is on June 25th, the day after qualification, how do we determine at that time what our principal purpose is for purpose of representing to members what they can solicit for us? Do we look at our activity historically? Do we look at a reasonable expectation of our activity going forward? Do we project worst case scenario and tell them raise just $20,000 for this? I mean, what are we supposed to do in this situation? And one of the concerns I think we have, you know, about draft B, and it's a concern that's gone through the very beginning of the process when we first dialogued with OGC about this, was the sense that we were somehow hiding the ball in terms of what we were going to do or what we weren't going to do. The fact of the matter is we're coming to you like any other ballot initiative committee. We want to do what ballot initiative committees do, and it ought to be possible for the commission to tell us what ballot initiative committees can have federal candidates do without, you know, a presentation of our political program, you know, on a line item budget detail for September, October, and November. That doesn't exist. It probably won't exist for some time and would not exist in any other normal circumstance.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear that, and I personally certainly do not wish to suggest in any way, shape, or form that you're trying to hide the ball on us or trying to withhold information. However, this is the way the statute is written. It's written in terms of what you can do based on your principal purpose, whether your principal purpose is FEA or not. And I can't tell you what your principal purpose is. I don't know what, you know, to the extent that you don't know what your client's going to do, I know even less what your client is going to do. I am far less well situated than you are to figure out what your principal purpose is.
But may I respond, Commissioner?
Sure.
I don't wish to be to interrupt.
Go for it.
Hey, what are you telling me for?
That's the thread that pulls the sweater, isn't it? I mean, if you start from the premise that a ballot initiative committee is not an election for office subject to the BCRA rules, then it leaves you in a fine place to be able to make that representation. I can safely say that my activities are not for the purpose is not that my principal purpose is not to engage in activities in connection with an election. And that is what the IRS asks basically for C4 purposes. Is my primary purpose to promote the social welfare, or is it to otherwise to engage in partisan intervention? And I would observe also that in our request actually is different from some of those that you've dealt with before. We've made some representations to you that others haven't made to you before. So, for example, we have said that we are not going to make public communications that promote or support federal candidates. We have said that we are not going to engage in coordinated communications with federal candidates. And by the way, let me dwell on that for a moment and tell you what the consequence of that is. Because your current coordination rules have an exemption for endorsements of candidates, but have not extended that exemption to endorsements of ballot initiative committees, under current law, I mean, that means our candidates can't be on your pieces before their voters, you know, within 90 days of the election, I mean, if there's not otherwise, if they don't otherwise fall within the coordination safe harbors. I mean, I don't, again, the coordination rules are being rewritten, so I don't know what those will be at the end of the day, but under current law, there's bulwarks against us using this committee to try to feather the nests of the people who are raising money for us. But, I mean, that's why the C4 issue, you know, in principal purpose versus non-principal purpose, I think is so vexing for the commission, because it goes to that core issue, which is any of this in connection with an election for office or not? And one last thought on the C4s. It was asked why...
Well, maybe I'll interrupt you this time.
That is certainly your prerogative. But one last thought. The reason Congress... The reason Congress put that exemption in was they wanted members to continue to be able to raise money for charity, or they wanted members to continue to be able to raise money for politically active non-politically active nonprofits. And they knew that there would be some politically active nonprofits for which they wanted members to be able to continue to raise money, but under a specific set of rules. For example, the NAACP Voter Registration Fund, or groups like that. That's why they had that. But they didn't write that with a consciousness of ballot initiative committees. They didn't write that with any consciousness of ballot initiative committees, because it was not something that the commission or the IRS or they had focused on in that way before then.
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you. And without interrupting, I waited for you to finish, Brian, even though Commissioner McGann gave me permission to interrupt you. Again, I don't know what was in the heads of members of Congress when they wrote this provision, but on its face, it does apply to 501c organizations like the one you represent. On its face, it applies. And on its face, it's hinged on whether the principal purpose is to conduct certain defined federal election activities, including voter reg, voter ID, GOTV. That's what Congress looked at, and that's what Congress said was important in determining how much money one could raise for a 501c. And if that's what Congress said, that's what I'm kind of stuck with.
May I comment?
Sure, go ahead.
But that functioned, Commissioner, as an exemption to a general restriction on solicitations in connection with elections. I mean,
true, and that takes me back to the problem of saying that, you know, it's I hear the argument that ballot initiatives are different and that our regulations speak about elections for candidates, but when you're talking about driving people to the polls on the same day that candidates are going to be on the ballot, on that same ballot, I mean, it doesn't reflect the reality of the situation to say, well, the ballot initiative is some separate thing that is, you know, different from the other things that are on the ballot. It's all part of the same election.
Is that an invitation to comment?
If you want to.
But it is a different thing. I mean, it can't be formed for the private benefit of a group of individuals or for a political party. It has to advocate for issues. I mean, it can't be established, financed, maintained, or controlled by members of Congress. I mean, members aren't able to work with them in some ways in the same intimacy that they can, for example, with their candidate for governor. I mean, it just is different.
I hear what you're saying, but when you're talking about doing GOTV for that same election day, election event, where the candidates are going to be on the ballot, I think the distinction kind of disappears in practice. It may be a legal distinction, it may be a technical distinction. I understand the distinction that you're drawing, but I think in practice it just evaporates.
Just to set forth where I am, as several of my colleagues have already mentioned, one of the key questions, if not the key question, in this whole advisory opinion request is what is an election? Is a ballot initiative or the vote on a ballot initiative an election under the Federal Election Campaign Act? Because if a vote on a ballot initiative is an election, then members or federal candidates may not solicit contributions outside the limits on behalf of those committees under any circumstances. Wouldn't that be the case, Mr. Swoboda, regardless of whether or not there's a federal candidate on the ballot, whether or not there's a non-federal candidate on the ballot, or whether or not it's a standalone ballot initiative with no candidates on the ballot? If we're going to call a ballot initiative or the vote on it an election, then by definition, under 441 IE, a federal candidate couldn't solicit funds outside the limits and prohibitions of the Act on behalf of that committee. Is that a correct reading, would you say?
Well, first, we certainly don't seek that outcome here.
Right. No, but I'm just saying as an analytical point.
But as an analytical point, Commissioner, I think that point is valid, and I think that's the point that actually one of the commenters, has made in the comments. If I read the Campaign Legal Center's comments and Democracy 21's comments, for example, correctly, they have said that members may not raise anything for the committee that is outside the limits, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act. The way I read that, what I think they intended to mean is that, for example, our initiative committee could not have members solicit individuals to contribute to our committee within $2,400 limits because those contributions are not being solicited under the reporting requirements of the Act. We can solicit contributions to our own campaign that we could send to them, or we could perhaps, form a PAC to solicit those contributions, but we couldn't actually call any one of the individuals or have a member call any one of the individuals here and ask them to make a contribution directly to the committee. Now, I don't think the Commission has ever in any of the previous opinions post-BICRA even come close to taking that position.
And aren't you glad we're so much more reasonable than that?
But it does beg the question of what is the underlying logic and what is the underlying factual record about corruption and circumvention that is driving whatever position the Commission arrives at here as a statement of law.
So if a ballot initiative, the vote on the ballot initiative is an election, then we got Berman Dulo wrong, because if that's an election, which in which case would be a non-federal election, that we allowed federal candidates to solicit money outside the limits with respect to that vote. Just to be clear, I don't think that ballot initiatives, votes on ballot initiatives are elections. When I look at the statute, when I look at the regulations and the legislative history, to me, elections contemplate individuals, and as Commissioner McGann pointed out in the regulatory definition of election, it talks about individuals seeking office, and that's what the definition of election contemplates. But in this counterfactual world, if we're going to say this is an election, then we've gotten it wrong up to this point. But if they're not elections, 441 IE prohibits federal candidates and office holders from soliciting funds outside the limits with respect to federal election in connection with a federal election or any other election in connection with any other election than a non-federal election. So if we're going to say that a vote on a ballot initiative committee is not an election, then it would seem that it doesn't fit within the prohibition that's set forth in 441 IE. Now, I've heard, I don't know if it's been stated specifically, but at least in some of the drafts and some of the discussion, a distinction has been made between ballot initiatives that are on the same ballot as a federal, where a federal candidate appears, and ballots where there are no federal candidates. Is there anything really in the statute, the regs, or the legislative history that draws a distinction on that basis that says, yes, if a ballot initiative is on the same ballot as a federal candidate, that it will be considered an election for those purposes, but otherwise a vote on a ballot initiative will not be considered an election?
I don't think there is, and it raises an issue about the prior advisory opinions that's worth considering, which is that even in those instances when the Commission has applied 300.62, the restrictions on raising for state and local office as they did in Flake, it plainly was not state or local offices that was animating the Commission's concern. The Commission's concern, to the extent that there were commissioners who addressed it, was that it was somehow in connection with a federal election. That's what the Commission was afraid of, and that's what caused them to impose, whether it was the limits that were offered in Flake, or it's what caused them not to impose the limits in Berman Doolittle because of the absence of federal candidates from the ballot. It's what presumably caused them to impose the limits in the Nunes-McCarthy opinion. But, the question is that grounded in actual record? Is that grounded in actual statute? And, here I guess what we're saying is our argument is that it's not.
The question I'd ask is, so, like I said, I don't think that ballot initiative votes on ballot initiatives are elections. I guess one way that that has been suggested to get around that is that, well, you know, these ballot initiative committees conduct federal election activity. You know, as you proposed and as you mentioned in your request that should this ballot qualify or be certified, this initiative qualify, then you plan on engaging in voter ID and get out the vote activities, and that since 441 IE prohibits federal candidates from soliciting money outside the limits for federal election activity, that would necessarily prohibit federal candidates from raising money outside the limits to ballot initiative committees. That's the argument. That assumes that those activities that you'd be performing would be considered federal election activity, but just because you would be conducting voter ID and get out the vote, does that by themselves convert those activities into federal election activity? Since the definition of federal election activity still contains the or at least with respect to voter ID and get out the vote, those activities still need to be need to be in connection with a federal election in order to meet the definition. Would those, just to ask you, would those activities, if performed by your committee, meet the definition of federal election activity?
I'm not sure that they would. I mean, for example, with voter identification, I don't have my rules in front of me, but I mean, there's a question under your current definition, you know, is there a reference expressly to candidates or not? I mean, so for example, I'm plainly conducting voter ID under current commission rules if I'm identifying, for example, for support for Martin O'Malley or Bob Ehrlich in Maryland. I honestly don't recall, as I sit here to you today, whether the same is true, for example, saying, you know, will you vote, you know, for the FAIR Act or not?
Okay. Because the way I look at it is just because if we're not going to call a ballot initiative committee an election, and I don't think it is either under the for the reasons I've stated already, under the statute, under the regs, under the legislative history, and if that's the case, then voter ID and get out the vote activities that would be conducted by your committee, I don't think meet the definition of federal election activity either, because those would be done not in connection with because that would not be a federal election. And to me, that's really the key issue here. I think assuming that the committee would be conducting federal election activity, I think that assumes the very thing that needs to be proven here, which is that those activities are in connection with an election actually on which a federal on the same ballot that will feature a federal candidate. And the way I read the relevant legal materials, I don't think that a ballot initiative committee is an election, and therefore I don't see how the limits on 441 IE apply in this particular instance. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't be long, because I think that my colleagues, Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Walther, have expressed a lot of my concerns. But I just want to note that the draft B doesn't conclude that the ballot initiative is an election. This restriction is on federal office holders or candidates raising funds in connection with. And I think, you know, I feel like this is deja vu all over again. We've had a lot of conversations recently about what in connection with an election means. And you know, FIA also has that concept, in connection with an election in which candidate federal office appears on the ballot. And the conclusion of draft B is that this activity is, the solicitation would be in connection with an election, because it is a federal election happening on the same day of this. And from my perspective, unlike some of my colleagues, I have not been through a number of these. And while, you know, I will consider myself fortunate, I think that to the extent that each of these prior situations have provided requests with factual distinctions, I think that's why they've come to different conclusions. And I'm not sure that that's, I think that is the nature of advisory opinions. I will note that I think there's some overlap in these drafts, and to the extent that we're apparently moving towards a path where neither draft will receive 4 votes, I assume we will at some point be able to direct counsel to provide, to the extent there is an answer, at least with respect to some time period, provide an answer to the requester.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with my colleagues, the Chairman and Commissioner McGann, on everything they've said, and I have a very hard time, just practically speaking, squaring some of the comments of my colleagues who support Draft B and understanding where the line would be. I think you could run with that so far that it's hard for me to understand where in connection with ends in the analysis that you've put forward. I think one of the comments that one of my colleagues said was that it doesn't reflect reality to say that any kind of activity in connection with this ballot initiative won't affect the federal election. And I can think of all kinds of wild hypos that are different, admittedly, with the facts presented before us. But, I mean, just the idea of a federal candidate working to get some kind of appropriation from a federal entity, I know that's, I'm sorry, you didn't say that it didn't reflect.
I didn't say any activity. I said GOTV, federal election activity as defined in the statute, GOTV, voter registration, voter ID, in connection with a ballot initiative that is on the ballot on the same day as federal candidates are also on the ballot. That's the limiting principle. It's on the ballot on the same day, on the same time. People are going to go to the polls. They don't think of it as a separate election. You know, when people go to vote, they don't say, well, I'm going to vote in two elections. I have my ballot initiative election, and I have my candidate elections. That's not the way people think about it. I'm going to the polls to vote. I'm going to vote on whatever's on the ballot. It's all on the same ballot.
I mean, if we're going to talk about what people are thinking about, I don't know that that's, I mean, maybe that's true, but at the same time, I don't think that they go to the polls thinking, well, this is all just one big mess and one vote's not related to the other. And if so-and-so, if Congressman so-and-so is on the ballot and I saw him in any kind of advertisement related to this ballot initiative, then somehow those are connected. And wait, now you made me lose my train of thought.
Sorry. Sorry, I didn't do that on purpose.
I know you didn't.
It is tough
to
follow, and it does, yeah.
With respect to this is what I was going to say is when basically the outgrowth of what you're saying, and I understand you did put a limiting principle on whether or not there was this reflected reality, is that now federal candidates, regardless of whether they're advocating for a ballot initiative in their own state or not, basically can't work on an issue that's important to them. And a ballot initiative isn't an election, it is an issue. It's speaking out on an issue that is presented to the voters to decide a legislative matter. So we're essentially saying, sorry, even if you feel very strongly about an issue, whether it's redistricting or immigration or whatever the case may be, because you're a federal office holder, you can't do anything to get people to support or oppose your issue. And so I see it as even broader than just the ballot referenda. It again prohibits people who do have a bully pulpit and do have wide voter recognition from advocating for these issues. And I think that is a conclusion that's not supportable by anything in the law or the regulation.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I don't think there's anything in Draft B that says they can't get out there and advocate for an issue that they care about. All we're talking about is whether they can raise funds for an entity that is then going to conduct certain defined, we believe, that's what they've told us, certain defined activities under the law that are defined as federal election activities. If any of these people want to get out there and say, I support this redistricting initiative, I support this ballot initiative, I don't think there's anything in Draft B that says they can't say that to their heart's content.
But isn't, sorry, you were, okay. But isn't the ability to go out and say, hey, I believe in this so much, I want you to give money to this group, isn't that a form of support that we're choking off?
It is one form of support, but my point is that my colleague overstated the, you know, that now they can't do anything. That we're not saying now they can't do anything. And what we're saying is, you know, it's not, you know, I've got nothing against this ballot initiative committee, and you know, if it's successful or not, I've got no dog in that fight. I'm just trying to interpret a statute that Congress wrote.
Commissioner McGann.
couple thoughts in no particular order, and some of these may matter today, some of them may matter tomorrow, depending on what you do, because now after Unity 08, there's other options available, so some of this may matter long term, or may matter in future AOs. But dealing with in no particular order. Certainly, I don't think anyone's saying that members of Congress or candidates can't do anything. But it does seem to get close to that in certain respects. The concern I have is trying to find out maybe where there may what else they could do, and it goes back to my question on the facts of this and how I heard the answer was you're representing that you're going to be doing voter ID, get out the vote, maybe voter reg, maybe not, but you don't know. The concern I have is you need to raise money today, but you're not sure how you're going to spend the money. But yet we're choking off the ability to even raise money. I wonder if there's a way that if you raise money specifically for federal election activities as of the sort that Commissioner Weintraub suggests, maybe that's limited. But would there be money raised that wouldn't be spent on those activities? Or maybe at this point you don't know. But it seems to me we're conflating the fundraising and the fund spending. And the times the commission's done that in the past, that hasn't really worked out so well. So from your client's perspective, is there a way to thread this needle?
Well, there may be, Commissioner. It's a subject I wish draft B addressed in terms of giving us more precise guidance in terms of how we calculate. You know, on June 25th, the day after the qualification window is closed, assuming that draft B has 4 votes and is issued to us, how then at that point we make a determination to give an honest letter to members of Congress saying these are the limits under which you may raise. I mean, how we determine whether at that point they may raise unlimited funds or whether they may raise only $20,000 for individuals earmarked for federal election activities. More guidance on that in draft B would be helpful to us. And that's the question right now where draft B doesn't tell us. It basically says you figure it out, but it doesn't tell us the sorts of things that would affect the commission's consideration as we figure it out. Again, do we look to what we've done before? Do we look to what we plan to do? Do we look to, as you mentioned, perhaps, you know, raise into a fund that's only going to do discrete certain things? I mean, it really depends on what the commission chooses to guide us on that point, because there's no other authority for it so far.
Not a question, but more just confirmation. That your recollection of why this provision is in the statute matches mine, and some of this is factual, some of this is anecdotal, and I think it'd be clear what's factual. But when Shays Meehan was going through the House originally around the time it was maybe going to pass, this the nonprofit section wasn't in the bill. And there was Shays Meehan, and then there was another bill sponsored by Bob Ney of Ohio and co-sponsored by Al Wynn, and as I recall it, the Congressional Black Caucus was split on which bill they were going to support. This provision was then drafted and added to Shays Meehan and then firmed up a lot of votes, and the NAACP was the talking point at the time, and when you said that, it refreshed my memory that this was designed to allow members to continue to raise for the NAACP and other groups that do similar sorts of grassroots activities. But the statute itself is, it's part of the larger statute that still goes back to whether or not it's election-driven. And I agree with that point you made. But turning to the statute itself, it's the same point I just brought up. It seems to me, though, if you're raising money and you're not sure how you're going to spend it, that changes the analysis, even if we go down the road of reading the statute the way some are going down. It seems to me that there still may be a way for your client to seek help of politicians to raise money if they're not raising specifically for that. And I don't have the section in front of me. Maybe someone has it and can actually, I don't know, consult the actual text of the statute. But
right here.
But okay. Does your client have a perspective on that? Is there a way to read the statute?
Well,
or a more general solicitation may be okay?
There's certainly room for argument that if we're raising money, if we're asking people to raise money for us, that's not going to be used in connection with the federal election. It's going to be used, for example, simply to pay the staff of the initiative, simply to pay for the fundraising costs of the initiative, simply to pay for the TV ads that are going to ask people to vote for the initiative without qualifying as FEA. You know, it's not obvious to me why that ought to be restricted.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Since I happen to have in front of me the statute. You know, I think it's an interesting proposition. I think I'm not sure, because the statute speaks in terms of an organization whose principal purpose is to conduct such activities, not, you know, solicitations for particular purposes. So I think, you know, I couldn't say sitting here today that that would necessarily be a yes, but I think there might be a good argument for saying that if you were to structure your accounting in such a way that, I mean, that would be a different advisory opinion request, basically. You would say, you know, if you wanted to pose that advisory opinion request saying, well, what if we were to say, regardless of what our principal purpose is, we're going to have a segregated account that is not going to fund any FEA. Can we raise money for that? You know, I would certainly be willing to take a close look at that. I can't tell you how I would vote on that sitting at the table. And as I said, I think there is, you know, you've got an initial obstacle in the way the statute is worded, because it speaks of the overall principal purpose of the organization. But I think there might be a good argument for that, and I'd certainly be willing to consider it. I wanted to also, you know, just give you an off-the-cuff reaction. Draft B is not going to get adopted, so, you know, there's not much point in trying to rewrite it now, because it's still not going to get adopted, so it's not going to provide you with the kind of clarity and guidance that you might like. But I would think, in terms of trying to figure out what your principal purpose is, that since we've kind of carved out pre-qualification activities and said you can do whatever you want then, basically, I would think you wouldn't necessarily have to look backwards. You would have to look forwards and determine what, as best you can, what you think you're going to be doing in terms of making that determination as to whether the principal purpose of those activities is going to be FEA or not. You know, I'm sure you'd want to do that in good faith, and, you know, sometimes situations change, and, you know, maybe at a certain point you might have to issue a second letter saying, oops, we have now changed our focus and we realize that everything we're doing is FEA, so we really, you know, have to ask you to, we appreciate your past efforts on our behalf, but we'd have to ask you to stop, you know, raising money for this. Now we can no longer make this certification that our principal purpose is not FEA. You know, I can imagine the situation might change over time. You know, maybe in the last week before the election, that's all you're going to be doing is FEA. But, you know, at that point, maybe you're not raising money anymore. I don't know. I don't know what your plans are. But I would think that, you know, to the extent this gives you some comfort or guidance, even under my more restrictive view, that you wouldn't have to look backwards necessarily to determine your principal purpose, because we have, the Commission has in the past drawn that dividing line at qualification. So if that's helpful to you, coming from, you know, just one person's opinion sitting up here.
Any further questions or discussion? Do we have a motion? Strategy. Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry for the delay. I move adoption for draft A that we've been discussing this morning, agenda document number 10-29.
Does everyone understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 3-3 with Commissioners McGann, Hunter, and myself in favor, and Commissioners Walther, Weintraub, and the Vice Chair opposed. Are there any further motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With equal hopes of success, I move adoption of draft B.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Nay.
No. The motion fails 3-3 with Commissioners Walther, Weintraub, and the Vice Chair in favor, and Commissioners McGann, Hunter, and myself opposed. I suppose at this point we're probably at the point where we'll need to instruct General Counsel to draft a letter in response to the requester. At the very least, I think where we'd all agree is that at the very least they're entitled to raise up to $20,000 as set forth in draft B. obviously. Myself and Commissioners Hunter and McGann think it should be much further than that, but I don't know how exactly that would be couched, but I Commissioner Weintraub?
I think we actually could go farther than that, because draft B also agrees that it would be unlimited pre-qualification.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have those two areas of agreement. We could do what we did in McCarthy-Nunes, which is to issue a short answer that at least covers the basis that we agree on, and then individual commissioners can issue separate statements if they so choose.
Any discussion on that? Is that sufficiently clear instruction for you to put together a draft? And then, okay.
I think so.
Mr. Swoboda, did you have a question about that?
I do have one question. There was one question we also asked in the original request, which was whether post-qualification the committee could legally ask federal office holders to solicit contributions from federal PACs as well as from individuals. And we made arguments toward that end that draft B did not seem to embrace, but I don't know where the commission's thinking is, you know, on that. My view on that subject is I realize that 300.64 refers to individuals. I think the Commission's got flexibility for interpreting that term, particularly since federal PACs at bottom are funded by individuals, and it seems nonsensical that a member of Congress could solicit up to, you know, $15,000 for a PAC for the principal campaign or for a congressional campaign committee, and yet could not solicit a PAC at all post-qualification for a ballot initiative committee that triggered the principal purpose requirement. So I don't know what the Commission's current thinking is on that. It hasn't figured into our debate. But it seems to me a restriction that doesn't flow from the corruption concerns or circumvention concerns I've heard from certain commissioners today, and is a very great practical import for us as we try to guide our members.
Any discussion on Mr. Swoboda's comment? Commissioner Walther.
We might be able to consider that issue. I'm not prepared to really to want to vote on it without thinking a little more about it and maybe getting comments from the Office of General Counsel. But I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe we can fit in an answer if we can reach a consensus on one. I'm not sure. Just a thought.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the one hand, that sounds like it's still... There's still a fighting chance. I certainly, they could ask PACs. Your client can get members of Congress to ask PACs for money. At least that's my view. Larger issue is timing. I raised the issue about wonder if there's a way through accounting to you may take us up on that. You may not because of the timing. AOs are not the fastest way to get an answer. We do have an expedited procedure in place, but that is not as limited as it used to be. But given that you're not really, in my view, an election committee, I'm not sure if we could expedite, but I hope we could if you do want to come back. And to the extent that there is an open question, which I think they did ask, and I think you know we do owe them an answer sooner rather than later. But I'd rather get an answer that I could support than one I couldn't. the timing of this is somewhat of a concern. The request was put in some time ago. Qualifications coming up. You need to raise money now. You don't know how the whole issue of how you're going to spend the money really is academic if you can't raise it in the first place. And that's really the issue we're here with today. So maybe, Mr. Chairman, any thoughts on timing and how we could move this along?
If we could get some clarification from General Counsel about the timing on this, when's the 60-day limit?
The 60-day limit, Mr. Chairman, is June 14th.
Okay, so
we actually
in a
did
couple
make
weeks.
Some attempts to not take the full 60 days. Not as fast as Brian had asked, perhaps, but you know, we tried not to drag it out to the last minute.
Okay.
If I can mention, the 60 day though is just a statutory max. We don't have to take 60 days. And the qualification is when, Mr. Zobita?
The deadline for qualification is June 24th.
That's about a month.
Right.
Less than a month.
Right.
So every day that goes by is an opportunity cost that's lost and we can never repair. So the 60 day thing, that's nice, but that's not really the clock. And if they want to come back and all that, so that I've seen what the chairman thought about trying to hustle.
Commissioner Weintraub.
All I can say is I'm willing to make a personal commitment to, you know, I mean, Draft B says no to that question on the PACs. So, you know, we're sort of starting out from a no. Like Commissioner Walther, I'm willing to take another look at it, and I'll make a personal commitment to do that within the next 48 hours and you know, come back with a conclusive determination so we could wrap it into whatever draft council is preparing, and they could send it around on a very short tally.
So in terms of what we're going to vote on now, or whether or not we need to vote on something at this time, whether, I think at this point we just need to instruct council to put that draft together so that we can then see if we can at least, it sounds like we're going to have certain elements where we'll have consensus, and then on this, the issue that Mr. Swoboda just brought up right now, we'll have to see if we can find consensus on that as well, and then that will be circulated on tally. So. Ms. Duncan.
Just wanted to confirm that we understand that direction. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything further on this, or have we pretty much exhausted all ammunition? And well, if there's nothing further, I want to thank Mr. Swoboda, Ms. Kane, for your appearance, and for, as always, your very enlightening comments and the banter back and forth. It's always, I think, interesting for us and hopefully interesting for you, and I think this has been very helpful. And so thanks again for your appearance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioners.
That is the final item on the agenda. Mr. Staff Director, do we have any management or administrative matters?
Not at this time, Mr. Chairman.
All right. If nothing else, meeting is adjourned, and have a nice Memorial Day weekend.